We had planned to introduce this track with Hell You Talmbout, a song released by Janelle Monae and the Wonderland Collective. It is a song that lists the names of black people killed by police and vigilantes in the United States. But after I cut one version of this track with Hell You Talmbout for the introduction, it felt wrong to fade out the song for a discussion about pedagogy. Even if a connection could be made, this isn't a song to fade out. It feels too real and necessary to play in part. In the question of how to use sound writing in the classroom, we've discovered our own complications using sound. How do we honor contexts and history? How do we honor the urgency of social movements? How do we honor the fact that many names, most recently Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, and Corinne Gaines, must be added to this list? By using the song, are we circulating an important political message, or turning an important political message into an academic object? And, as we discuss and reflect on these complex and important questions, our due date for the project drifts further into the past. The need to finish our own sound writing products comes into tension with our need to be accountable to movement work inside and outside of the classroom. In the end, we've decided that instead of playing the song here as introduction, we will invite listeners to go find the track, available free on SoundCloud, and to listen or re-listen to it with their full attention on the music and message. In our final track, Yanira asks who did sound writing in their classrooms. I respond, followed by Michael, Yanira, and Tim, all talking about assignments, complications, and outcomes.
So who actually produced a podcast in their class?
I guess what did folks assign? Or how did it go? Or I'm interested in that.
The four of us, I had students actually produce podcasts, and then Michael has podcasts as a option in a class that hasn't run yet, right?
That's right.
But I don't know. You want me to talk about how it went?
I'm going
to
talk about the potential of that kind of. Like, that was something I was really curious about. I mean, I didn't end up producing podcasts with my students. There was an assignment that was a bit different than anything I've done.
So I thought, I gave all of my students an A on the podcast, just across the board. And I was more or less explicit about it in the class, was like, I just want you to look at a song, analyze it for its political disruption, and just like, I want to listen to it in the car on my way back from Pennsylvania to New York, and I want to enjoy it, and I want to give you all A's. And that was kind of my way of setting it up. It wasn't a high-stakes thing that they were producing. And I thought that that was kind of important, of like, it was more a process. And then, Tim, when you were talking about the cipher, and you were talking about, like, the academic mode is critique, and I was thinking about Michael's assignment, and I was thinking about the way that I had framed it, where it wasn't about critique. It was about, where do you notice the political disruption in this song? Or, you know, it was like Michael's, where are you identifying these criteria of African rhetorical practice in these songs? And so it's like, that kind of analysis was more about like understanding and a deeper reading of the text instead of critique of them. And since mine was around political rhetoric it wasn't just limited to hip-hop, it was political rhetoric, and they could pick whatever music they wanted, but I gave a long list of examples. And so they were listening to, like, Creedence Clearwater and, you know, reading up about the Vietnam War. They were listening to Green Day's American Idiot and learning about the United States under the Bush administration, which was, like, an event long in the past for most of my students. And I could feel and hear the deeper engagement with the music, the listening instead of consuming that was happening. So I was really heartened by that. And I'm going to do it again with changes, I think, of making sure that all of my students have the same access to it and using the classroom more as like a, thinking of the classroom from certain moments as like sound booth, and like, let's just do all of the work in the classroom together instead of you can go off with your laptop and all of the frustrations that arise, and then maybe, like, you know, I had people coming to my office
the week before finals week, and it's due in 24 hours, and they like still haven't been able to figure out how to work it on their computer because they've got a glitchy microphone or something. You know, technologies are presented to us as if they're this democratizing force in society. They're sold to us that way, and then realizing in the classroom how, okay, I was moving away from this academic essay, which was supposedly this oppressive force, and then I'm switching all of a sudden, now we're doing podcasting, and the technological gap that meant for some people meant that all of the structural, the systemic hierarchies that come through were again exposed, because it was like, oh, I've got to borrow a laptop from the library, and then I can't download it because of the program, because of this access, or like I'm working on this old loaner computer that doesn't have a microphone that works. And so this was not a, without a lot of work, it is definitely not a democratizing genre. It's not a democratizing genre on its own to just say, oh, we're doing podcasts and aren't you all glad?
That's thanks to material access is emerging there again. I mean, you know, in the time that you wrote it, it just had to do with getting a computer. Now, it's more nuanced when we're asking them to perform particular tasks with computers that are beyond just composing, writing, right?
I know what it reveals
in terms of web-based type-based composition, and you know, we're moving into another whole realm. And then the experiential is the next stage. Then, now that you have it and it works, then. Like, are you familiar with it? Can you make it do what you need it to do?
Yeah, like, I love that analysis gets applied transnationally. Like, oh, folks in other countries don't have it. And I'm like, that's actually happening right here. That's not, it's not just a transnational experience. That's, you know. And actually could be very reductive about sort of about how we perceive transnational and like the people in other countries and technology. So that's a really interesting. I guess I was asking because, you know, Tim, you were talking a lot about sort of the summary and the critical summary as one of the things that you assigned. And thinking about sort of what people did in the classroom and wanting to know. At some point I had my students translate some of the readings into a political poster, you know, moving from one unit to the next into a visual. And, and I guess where I ended up was that it wasn't just like sound writing that I was getting at, but like, how do we like just get genres to look at different genres to disrupt the essay as the part or the central genre. And then sound writing fitting into that whole mess. Right. So we're not replacing one with the other. And I guess from what you said, Ben, the sound booth sounds exciting. Like the idea of working with podcasts from the get, and now that's some final assignment, sounds really exciting.
That's what I found with my multimodal assignment too, which was the final assignment, is that one, students were spent by the end. It's like, you know, they're making it around Thanksgiving, and they're just like, you want me to do what? And so my response was, well, okay, well, I'll offer more of a smorgasbord, right? That doesn't have to be just one album. And that's why I love, Ben, your assignment, where it's like, find a song, right? It's all folk music, right? As Hooray for the Riff Raff and Louis Armstrong remind us, right? Louis says, ain't never heard no horse sing a song, you know? And so positioning hip-hop as folk music, right? And this sense of, you know, that sense of everybody can find the political disruption in here. I love how pointed your prompts were, both Michael's and Ben's, as you mentioned, Ben. And mine ended up being like a complete joke, the multimodal piece. I was trying to replicate what Mark Anthony Neal and Ninth Wonder did by saying, you know, pick an album or pick a song off the album and extend that argument of that song through the visual, through written, through your voice, however you want to do. And what folks ended up doing is like they did it as groups, and you know, it ended up almost without fail, there was like one leader in the group that had a vision, and they went and found a bunch of pictures on the internet and just played the song over it. and it became like a remixed music video. But it didn't have the teeth that the Duke University one had, because they were working with archivists and special collections librarians at Duke, right? Mm-hmm. So the images that the students had access to the night before, as they were trying to get it done in between the job that they're working and the other five classes they're taking, right, it just didn't have the same, mm-hmm, it felt slapped together. Mm-hmm. And so, and it makes me think that we need to have the cutting room, right? The videography and the, like, sifting through the pictures, that needs to happen in the class. Just like the sound booth happens, has to happen in the class. And I need to figure out how I can actually facilitate that work, because I'm not that good at it.
Yeah, there's got to be some kind of way where we actually bridge that material gap and experiential gap too. Because, mm-hmm, I mean, we want them to engage the text critically, right? So I don't know how much is it, you know, is it necessary? I mean, getting back to the embodiment, right? It's necessary that they actually spend the time on the task and get their hands dirty and actually do the digging to a certain extent, but we got to support them in that too. Mm-hmm. Right? So that they don't become frustrated and it just becomes, you know,
another task.
Yeah.
Or like the product without the understanding, which is, I think, where like Yanir had kind of left her reflection, was if you jump to producing the thing when you haven't had students even take the album seriously or the topic seriously.
Right.
Yeah, at that point I sort of like followed Adam Banks' advice and I'm like, okay, the podcast is not going to be of service here. Just as a podcast, without, if we've sort of like, I think we need to just keep engaging with this and like really address the fact, like, what are these resistances, what's happening, you know, that the ideas felt more important at that point than just producing a neat podcast on something. And so I ended up there, and ultimately, it was joyful for me to teach with sound. I mean, it was different. It was just like, and I do want to hold on to that, because it created a different classroom regardless. And I think in some ways opened up really, you know, great conversations, important tensions, I thought, you know, cause I was rethinking a lot, like thinking that maybe those were failures, but you know, I ended up thinking like, oh, well, my goal wasn't really to get them to everybody to just fall in love with this album. Like, that really wasn't it, you know, or to try and convince, but to like sort of, you know, open up important conversations and like just seed something.